Matt Spanger, I've really been looking forward to this chat, David King. 56 yes. games across three clubs, the Eagles, the Swans, the Hawks, of course, the latter. He was a premiership player in 2014. He was a raging fan favourite. He's now an assistant coach at the Western Bulldogs, and he also just happens to be one of the nicest blokes in the business. Matt, welcome, and congrats on the new role.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate that.
But thanks for coming on. So it's yourself and Ross Lyons, old right-hand man Mark Webb, who are, I guess, are the final pieces of Luke Beveridge's coaching team at the Winton Oval. What lured you into the role, Matt? Because, as we'll document shortly, you'd taken a different path away from footy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, don't shy away that it certainly wasn't the traditional pathway into coaching. But I suppose I'd always wanted to be involved in footy in some capacity, and my involvement in my role at Collingwood in the last 12 to 24 months certainly had more exposure to coaching, particularly given some of the staffing resources you get exposed to a little bit more across the football world at the moment, and really started to get an appetite to get back into that coaching because I really did enjoy the aspects of working, particularly with the younger guys across the VFL program. And then how it eventuated was, I'm lucky enough, as you documented, played at a few clubs, and in one of those clubs I crossed paths with Bevo, and we've always had an open dialogue, and I've used him as a sounding board for a while now, and then the opportunity came up and certainly discussed it and thought that I could add some value.
I know Bevo, Matt, is of the opinion that you get great people and then you work out where you're putting them. You're going to look after the forwards.
Oh, good group.
Good group to work with. It always surprises me when you look, Matt, you've kicked 13 goals in your career. I mean, what the hell are you doing with the full?
Oh, David.
No, look, that's fair enough, David. I appreciate that. No, honestly, I don't shy away that I wasn't much of a forward. I think most of those goals came in my brief stint at the Swans as well, when that was a bit of a forward experiment. But I think most of the coaches I've had that certainly excel, I felt excelled in their roles, didn't really have many affiliations to the line that they played. I think these days you need to have an understanding of a holistic game plan, both offensive and defensively, and I think that's what all coaches add. And I've only recently started at the Bulldogs and met a few of those respective coaches, but that seems to be a pretty common thread there as well.
Yeah, no, I do mean that. I think that the ability to get great people in and then work out their roles is something that has come to the fore in recent time. What would be your mantra to coaching? What's the stamp that you'll put on this group? Is there something that you've got a deep-seated belief in, whether it be the team ethos or something individual for the players you're working with? Is there something that really drives you, that one ethos?
Yeah, probably. If I had to sort of answer the question specifically and narrow it down as best I could, I'd say that, certainly the one thing, and maybe this is the defender in me, and maybe it's just the nature of my playing career, but it's also what I've carried up with me post-footy to this day, is sort of understanding where you as a cog fit in the bigger machine to achieve what we're after. And I think providing that context and getting people to understand that is a really important part to then, getting them to be accountable for their role, but also providing that satisfaction in achieving it, because it doesn't necessarily need to be the person who's kicking all the goals or doing all those things that is important for the team to get the result they're after. And I think when you're a young person trying to break into a side, like, that can often be lost. And I completely understand that. I think anyone who's played the sport, not even at professional level, who's tried to break into any side, really can understand that you do want to play well personally. But certainly, as you get a bit older, what you're trying to achieve in terms of silverware, that can be put to the side.
Speaking of new Western Bulldogs assistant coach Matt Spanger. So Matt, let's perhaps go back to go forward just briefly here. Now, glorious year in 2014 at Hawthorn with that premiership, which we talked about. And then you delisted at the end of 2016, which I would have thought is where most listeners could probably last trace you back to. Now, where did you go and what did you do in the years post your playing career?
Yeah, for me, I was pretty keen to step out of footy for a little bit, just see what else the world had to offer. And I was lucky enough just through some... I was doing a day a week at Netball Australia whilst I was playing, and then stepped into a senior partnership manager role there for 12 to 18 months. And then my wife is a gastroenterologist, so she had an opportunity to go to the UK or London specifically to do her fellowship. So we went over there for a couple of years, and I worked in effectively digital sports marketing over there for a company called Green Room for a couple of years. And the opportunity at Collingwood to come back and get back into footy, which I was keen to do, came up at the end of 2019. So moved back pretty much as all the COVID stuff happened at the beginning of 2020. So it was it's been an interesting arrival back to Australia, but still enjoyable for, you know, for many aspects. And then I've been at, as I mentioned, been at Collingwood for the last effectively 18 months amongst the stand down and some other things in between.
So you've done a Bachelor of Business, and have you completed, is it two master's degrees, one in sport management, one business admin?
Yeah, that's correct. Maybe a glutton for punishment in terms of the study stuff, but no, it was more, I did most of it whilst I was playing. I'm the son of a teacher, and my dad's a, it was the CFO at Homesley Institute. So if I didn't actually focus on my studies, and my mum always was big on, you know, not wasting the private school education that they were lucky enough to afford me, that I certainly was indebted to them. I think maybe that instilled that in me. So I always enjoyed the learning aspect. And then the MBA I picked up in the last 12 months, more just with all that's happening in Melbourne, I found I had a little bit more time on my hands and just wanted to occupy the mind a little bit.
Mm. Have you had a chance to run that studying eye across the...
Yeah.
Well, I think an interesting one, sort of, in a not necessarily unique, but interesting phase is probably Josh Bruce at the moment. I think being predominantly one of the main senior players in the side, and obviously having his knee injury, I'm really keen to develop what I know he has aspirations to do in terms of his career, but also use what is his football IP and spread that across the group more than what he already is. And footy's a small world, and we've crossed paths and about playing days, you know, many years ago now. So I think that's one that I'd love to work closely with and use what he can offer to bring the better out of the group as well. And then probably on the other end of the spectrum, I mean, there's, you know, Sam Darcy's coming into the side, and whether or not that's forward or back, that's certainly one. I think having watched him at Oakley a little bit this year, an impressive young man, and the character of who he is, you know, in addition to his football ability. And then, you know, obviously Jamar is one that they speak about that, you know, has got a lot of talent that now might be a little bit more opportunity coming through after another year in the system. And so there's, but having said that, the group is unbelievably young across the board, from a forward group. And I think that's a really exciting part given, even though they're young in age, many of them are quite senior in terms of footy lifespan. You know, Aaron Norton comes to mind in that respect.
So cult hero status live on. I think there was a Facebook page titled Sir Matthew Spanger at one point, another radio station nicknamed you Fabio. It was enormous acclaim for you as a player. Does it, no modesty here either, by the way, Matty. Does it live on?
only in passing. Certainly not not to the extent that maybe it did when I was running around still. But no, I've the haircut's a little bit more professional and the beard's a little bit shorter, so maybe it's harder to make those calls out. So yeah, sorry to disappoint.
That's disappointing. That is disappointing. Could you get it back? How long you got? You've got 4 months now of the off season to get it back. Could you do the world a favour and just get the locks flowing again?
Yeah, every chance. I think that's one thing that lured me to the job at the Dogs, that they certainly embrace individual hairstyles. So maybe that's what brought me back.
There we go. Well, best of luck with it, Matty. Have you actually reported officially for duty yet, or is that still incoming?
No. We had our first day all together yesterday, right. And then just about to jump in the car and head in there today. But it's a softer start this week with the players obviously coming in next week.
Yep. Best of luck with it, mate. Well done on the appointment, as we said, and great to go for a little trip down memory lane with you. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Matt Spanger there, new forwards coach, assistant coach at the Western Bulldogs, who just eased into their summit program yesterday. The Dogs, by the way, Kingy, and why wouldn't you sign on as a member? Could you have any more reason for optimism? No. They've just passed 30,000 for the first time pre-Christmas and on their way to their target, which is 50,000.
I'll smash that.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? And if you're not going to sign up now, when are you going to sign up, as I say? And you can join as a 2022 member by visiting membership.westernbulldogs.com.au or calling 1-300-GO-DOGS. Now, we're not going to get right back into the nitty-gritty of the Tim Payne situation, King, because a lot of people would be tired of the ins and outs of that. But you and I have been fascinated probably ever since Friday when the news broke about how Cricket Australia and I guess the Tim Payne side of the fence have handled the situation since. we thought we'd get an expert on to talk us through it. Now, Grant Chisnell is a crisis advisor, he's a trainer, he's a podcaster, he's a founder, and he's the CEO of Left of Boom, and he's here for the all-new Kia Sportage, which has been unleashed. Grant, welcome. Thanks so much for your time.
Brilliant. Sam, thank you very much for having me. Good on you, Kingy.
So I'm really fascinated by it. Well, first of all, Left of Boom is a common military phrase a lot of listeners might know. Take us through the naming of your company, Left of Boom, and why it's relevant.
Yeah, Left of Boom is everything leading up to a situation. It's the opportunities that you have to either prevent something from happening, preempt any issues from occurring, and making sure that you're really well prepared for any situation. So I chose that name based on my experience in the military. And these are the things that you can really control leading into any situation. When you hit right of boom, unfortunately, in the chaos, you're into the response and what you can do to reassure stakeholders and then recover. And it's often a lot more difficult to manage yourself in those situations.
So you admit on your website that you're obsessed with the idea of resilience and the adaptive capacity of organisations when they are threatened by a crisis. And, geez, Cricket Australia have certainly been threatened by a crisis over the last period of time. I wanted to ask you, with obviously the generous benefit of hindsight, did Cricket Australia make a mistake, do you think, Grant, in trying to keep this a secret? Was this the ticking time bomb, do you think, that was always going to go off?
Yes. In short, yes. So I think the difficulty you face with these types of crises, either the cultural crises that I talk about, it's often hard to really take a good look, a good objective look at yourselves around what these situations can do and how they can manifest themselves and how they can emerge into a crisis like we've seen right now. So it's very difficult for organisations. It's easy to look at the operational style crises and think we need to put these processes and systems in place to deal with them. It's a lot more difficult to deal with these, you know, cultural style, because it's really a look into yourselves to understand what that may mean. So that means it's very hard to really construct a really good process to resolve these types of situations. So that means that, as we've seen in this situation here, they tried to obviously hold it and close it down a few years back, and unfortunately, these things always come out.
So, Grant, everyone's got an opinion on this, and everyone you talk to on the weekend says, oh, they should have done this or they should have done that, and why didn't they just, you know, throw money at this or throw money at that or you know, get their wording correct, and could they have done this? You must hear a lot of that. Is there a process you step through with aims along the way? Obviously, to have an issue never surface is the absolute utopia. But once you declare that that's not going to be the case, like the pain situation, is there steps from there that you could step us through as to what would be the best case scenarios?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing to acknowledge, Kingy, is that it's never a matter of if, it's now a matter of when these things are going to emerge. So if you take that mindset from the start and you embrace the fact that these things are going to come out, then you can actually really start to prepare yourselves for those types of situations and what you're going to do in them. So I talk about the starting with your purpose, so starting with the values of the organisation, and understanding that what is important to you is important also to the stakeholders that you're dealing with. And if you're doing everything to protect those values, then that's a really good starting point. From there, you've got to continually reassess the landscape that you're operating in and the stakeholder landscape, your customers, your shareholders, anyone that has an interest in your organisation. You need to continually reassess and preempt any emerging situations. And last but not least, that preparation is key. So about taking yourselves objectively through ways that you can prepare yourselves for that worst case. The last thing you want to be doing is stepping into a fight of your life and never having trained or prepared yourself for that moment. So, and I think what we've seen again with the situation that's happened now, Cricket Australia has done tremendous jobs in the past, particularly the sandpaper scandal a few years back. They acknowledged the situation, they apologised for it, they assured the stakeholder public through, or the cricketing public through the review conducted by the Ethics Centre, and then they've acted on a lot of those changes. So they've had some really good experience over the journey in preparing and responding to these types of events. It's a bit surprising that they've been challenged this time around, given that experience.
We're speaking to Grant Chisnell. He's the CEO of Left of Boom. And I know, Grant, you had Earl Eddings, who was the then obviously Cricket Australia chairman, on your Crisis Talks podcast. But just coming back to Tim Payne at the moment, it would appear from the outside that They were almost damned if they did, damned if they didn't. I mean, while they found Tim Payne didn't breach their own code of conduct going back several years, they deemed it consensual. You know, no breach of the code of conduct. That has been curious to some. Could they not, how would you have played it? Could they not have found a way to perhaps release a statement and ease the information out? And while that would have been immensely difficult for his wife, Bonnie, and all the rest of it, they could have expressed their disappointment as well, potentially sanctioned him, but said, we still see you as the captain of Australia, just to at least ease the ticking time bomb nature of it, or at least call his captaincy early and ensure a handover ahead of time?
Yeah, I think you're right. The statement at the start is, you're damned if you're doing, you're damned if you don't. So, but either way, you've got to pick a line, and you've actually got to back your line in whichever way it works in any situation. So, so the challenge I think that's seen this time by you know, alluding to decisions that were made in the past versus decisions that they would make going forward, you can't do that in these types of situations. You've got to accept responsibility as the organisation for whatever decisions have been made in the past or in the future. But then you've also got to back in. And you hear organisations, particularly sporting organisations, will say, we'll challenge the behaviours, but we'll support the person. And I think that was an opportunity missed in this case about challenging the behaviours that occurred and supporting Tim a bit better might have had a better outcome for the overall organisation.
These types of things are going to pop up from time to time, Grant. We see them a lot in the NRL and the AFL, and particularly through the off-season periods. I read through some of your information online, and you made a great point about having the fewest possible voices about any crisis. Can you just step us through the logic there?
Yeah, you want that single source of truth in these situations. And I think when you look at people like Jacinda Ardern, some of the great leaders over history, and Winston Churchill and these sort of people, that single voice is really carrying through these situations. And what they do immensely well is they're extremely empathetic, they're authentic and assured in their decision making, and they're really proactive in dealing with any issues around a situation. So that's really the crucial thing in presenting that single source or that single unified command in a situation, is about standing together through whatever situation is you're dealing with, and acknowledging that you're going to be confronted by a number of different issues and challenges along the way. But sticking together through that is so crucial as an organisation if you're going to succeed in a crisis. Grant, actually, there's no real success in a crisis. You've just got to get yourself through them.
Apologies, Grant. What would your advice be to Cricket Australia from here then? I mean, they've been seen to cop a bit of a black eye over the handling up until now. What would you advise them to do from this point on?
I think now get their heads together and get in line together on the situation you're dealing with. That's really the fundamental point from here on in. If there's any cracks within the organisation, they'll start to show and they'll be exposed through any engagement that's happening now. So really staying aligned to their common purpose and values is going to be so crucial for them going through from here and into the future. And I think the key things that organisations need to do in general, not just Cricket Australia in this context, is present a vision for the future that everyone can align to. So the decisions on the future captaincy, the decisions on the future of the organisation are already really well set. But the next choice they make, the next decisions that they're going to make, are going to be really crucial in setting that path for how they're going to act their way out of this situation.
So in this instance, Grant, would you advise them to bring the pain forward? Not the pain, bring the punishment forward, or bring the trauma forward, if you like, and select Tim Payne for the first available opportunity and accept what comes now rather than delay that?
Oh, look, I don't think you need to. In some cases, David, I think it's important to hold your line, whichever way it may be going. So you don't have to be rushed into decisions. And so, as soon as you start to do that, without considering what the next issue or next line of inquiry or the next incident may be, then you're starting to really see the tail wag the dog. So you've got to be really careful that you're not just knee-jerking to each situation as they're moving along. So you've got to take back. Take a breath, take stock of the situation, get alignment with the organisation, and then start to really work your way methodically through the next decisions that they're going to make.
You've got a pretty fascinating background, Grant. Obviously, you joined the Defence Force Academy years ago. Where'd you? East Timor, Sierra Leone, military advisor there. This was all about, I think you describe it as adjusting plans in dynamic risk environments.
Yes, it set me up for life. I mean, David knows my father, Peter Chisnell. He was a, you know, I was brought up as a son of a football coach, so
yeah,
had a great mentor and leader in him. So I carried that into the military career, and I was fortunate off the back of that to work within corporate affairs environment, and then sort of bring the skills of leadership and strategy and decision making in risk environments or dynamic environments, along with some of the stakeholder engagement pieces together into what I am now. So I'm very fortunate to have that background, and it's really set me up well for the work that I'm doing with organisations now.
So, Grant, most of your work we would never hear about. Most of your best work, most of your most productive work we would never know.
You're too right. You're too right, David. And that's the art and the skill around crisis management. So in any of these situations, there's always something going to emerge for a business. There's always something that's going to happen. There's always these dynamic situations that people get caught up into. And the best work is not just about suppressing these things. You can't suppress these things, but the best work is about ensuring that you're really proactive and confident and you're dealing with these situations in an empathetic way. So often that means that there's no medals, there's no parades at the end of these types of jobs.
Could have done with him in the early 2000s, I reckon.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, that's another story.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, that was probably getting out too, but don't worry about it.
No comment. Hey, Grant, great to have you on. We really appreciate your insight and your expertise on this. We've been fascinated by, I guess, the strategies I said behind it. And Cricket Australia clearly ran the gauntlet for a period of time there, and it finally caught up with them in pretty spectacular style on Friday. So appreciate your insights today. And we'll be listening to the podcast Crisis Talks as well. It's a fascinating listen.
Thanks, James. Really appreciate your time.
Go on here, Grant.
Grant Chisnell there, son of course. We weren't going to get...
Superstar.
Yeah, we weren't going to bring it and make it back to All About Footy, of course, but he grew up as the son of a life coach, of course, as well. So taking his military training and bringing it to the corporate world, if you like. Grant to have Grant Chisnell on the line. Kingy, you'd had a big weekend, but you got yourself horizontal on the couch for the supercars at the weekend.
What?
You were looking forward to it.
Hang on.
Sunday night's right.
What are you talking about?
You had a big weekend, but you got yourself horizontal on the couch to watch the supercars. A lot of us did. Sydney Motorsport Park. But again, what's going on up there? The heavens opened. The race was red flagged. We got a couple laps behind the safety car, and then it was sadly called off. It was sad for us at home, really sad for the punters who had waited all day in the rain and the weather up there at Eastern Creek to watch it. They didn't get the chance to. And a man as frustrated as anyone was a man who was on pole, Nick Percat for Brad Jones Racing. He joins us for Chemist Warehouse, the real house of fragrance this Christmas. A big welcome to you, Nick.
Morning, guys. How are we?
We're very well, and we're better for having you on board. Appreciate you joining us. You didn't take the news too well. I know you had a lot to lose. You were on pole, as I say. The decision to red flag the race. Can you let us in a little bit on your disappointment at that decision?
Yeah, I guess it's... I was sitting, it seemed like we had a track that was definitely raceable, and there was no standing water down the straight, and you know, it's the key things that we look for as drivers for it to be safe. So if the car's not aquaplaning in a straight line, there's really no drama. So yeah, it was disappointing is definitely a fair word, but I think the most disappointing thing is, you know, for all the fans that sat up on the hill and in the stands waiting for the race, everyone on TV, watching it on TV, that we couldn't just put in a show at Sydney Motorsport Park, which is probably ultimately the disappointing part. But I guess on the flip side, we're extremely lucky that we've got to race for these 4 weeks. So, I'm still not happy about the wet decision, but you know, I'm happy that we got to even put on any racing over the last 4 weeks.
You were moved enough to tweet in the aftermath, and you did apologise to those fans. You said the wrong call was made today, and then you touched on something that even if you're not a motorsport fan, I think resonated. We are paid professionals expected to drive to the conditions. We have wet tyres for a reason, Nick.
Yep. It doesn't need any more said than that. It's I didn't agree that the first red flag 2 weeks ago should have happened in the night race. And then this one, you know, was not necessary, but I guess there's things going on in the background that someone decided it was necessary. But, yeah, you know, everyone says when it gets wet and dangerous, but you know, when it gets wetter, we drive the cars accordingly. Yeah. Still on the limit of the grip that's available. You don't try and turn into turn one at 280 like we do in the wet, in the dry. So, you know, for me, I'm just a very much just a racer. I just want to race the car in any conditions and put on a show for everyone watching at home. So, yeah, I think, you know, the racer of me just says, just get on with it, guys, and stop complaining and we'll get it done. And I guess on the flip side is team owners saying, we've only got 3 or 4 days to prep these cars for Bathurst, so we'd prefer no damage. But for me, it doesn't matter if you drive them in the wet or dry. There's always a risk of big damage. We're driving very fast cars, so I'm not sure. Yeah.
I was looking forward to you going for it, Nick. Off pole, it was... Did you find that the... I don't know, in the end, not sure how many laps you did behind the safety car, whether it was 6 or 7 or 10 or how many laps it was. Did you find that was a little bit of theatrics in the end, because it was never likely to start by the sounds of the post-match press conference from the officials, with Bathurst only a week away? Did you think that was just a bit of a facade?
The more I found out post race, yeah. Like, I probably didn't even have to bother rocking up on Sunday by the sounds of it. But yeah, that's a long way above my pay grade. I'm not sure what's happened in the background at all. And there's things that sometimes the drivers don't really get told ever. So yeah, all I can say from my point of view, I think it should have run. But yeah, the more I'm hearing, the more it sounds like that, you know, we weren't actually going to ever put on the race once the rain started coming down before it. So yeah, not ideal.
Hey, Nick, Andrew Clark's just texted in here. He said he was a bit worried that your dog Nelson might have got a bit wet and wondered if he was there. He is an iconic figure after the E-Series, of course.
He was in Sydney. And look, I got home and he'd been at the Airbnb, but around at the neighbour's house playing in the rain all day. So he managed to survive. So to tally him off when we got back. But he survived. He didn't get cold. He didn't get a cold or sick, and he was just a little bit wet, but that's all right.
So I can hear that you're a competitor, hear the frustration even now in your voice, but I'll play devil's advocate, right? So the race is called off to keep you safe, to keep the drivers safe, not to mention all the volunteers. And in the earlier Super 2 race, there was a sizable crash. I'm not sure if that put the wind up them in the wet conditions. Can you speak a bit to that? Because obviously a risk gets run if it goes ahead. We don't want anyone to crash badly. We certainly don't want anyone to get hurt.
Yeah, exactly. I think for me, a big part of if you're going to red flag a race is the safety of the officials. You know, they're standing out in the elements. If there's thunder, lightning, anything crazy, 100%, you can't run. And if you can't get a helicopter in, you know, for medical service or anything like that, 100% you shouldn't run the race because it's not safe to put it on. I guess the rest of it, though, I think it's to send it and, you know, we do what we do. But the Super 2 race, I see how people try and compare. You know, you got to remember, they're young, aspiring drivers. I was doing that not long ago, and we... Back then, you know, when you're younger or what they're like now, that they don't have the experiences that I guess everyone in the main series has now. It's they have one speed and it's just flat out, and often there is crashes, and that's why it's called the development series, is because they're developing their skills and getting knowledge on how to do it, and they're not expected to, but you know you're going to be in for a bit of crash damage during the year with a rookie. So comparing the Super 2 race to what the supercar drivers, it's not a fair comparison. They're all very good for their age, but you know, I even go watch that race because I say, there is going to be some crashes here. Like, you know, it's Super 2, it's going to happen because they're inexperienced. So I think that's not a very fair comparison. And then the only other thing I see is only our fans of our sport who want to see it go on, they think it's the drivers making the decision, and they think, you know, I see some comments around saying that we're soft or weak, you know, just get in and drive them. But we will drive them in any condition. Like, at any point of the day, it doesn't matter if it's rain, hail or shine. We will drive them. It's the people way above us that makes the decision. So I guess for us as the athlete,
it's a bit upsetting to think for the fans to think that we pulled the pin on it, but it's 100% not the case. We'll drive them in any condition. So, and we have for our whole lives since we were 10 in go-karts. So, yeah, I think this needs to be probably clear that the officials are the most important bit to keep safe. And then for the drivers, we'll drive at any time. And then I guess at some point they deem it not safe to have the cars on track.
You're changing teams at the end of the year, going back to where you had some success, winning Bathurst in 2011 in the Walkinshaw Andretti team. Give us a quick insight into your preparation for Bathurst. Obviously, you're driving really well. Hit pole on the weekend despite the no race. Give us an assessment of your chances.
I'd like to think they're pretty good. I think they've qualified in the top five there a couple of times the last few years, and the car's been quite fast. And then we've made a few little changes just to the mechanical side of things, because we've had a few issues up there in the last few years with the power steering failing because of the load that Bathurst puts on the cars. So everyone at BJR has been really busy probably the last nearly 12 months to get them right, to make sure we don't have failures there. And I think, you know, we're in a really good spot, and I can't wait to get up there and have a crack in, you know, the last drive with Brad and BJR. So, you know, for me, I think we have a very good shot. We've got a very good co-driver in Dale Wood, and I'd like to think that we should be in the hunt come the end of the race. And I'll be disappointed if we're not in that, you know, top five and, you know, trying to grab one of those trophies.
And we'll be very disappointed, Nick, if it rains. So let's hope Mother Nature plays ball.
appreciate
you joining us, mate. You wanted a decade ago. Best of luck up at Bathurst.
If it rains, Nick, don't you stack it, mate. If you stack it, the feedback will be severe.
Good on you, Nick.
Don't
Good
worry,
luck.
They got 6 months to repair them.
Nick Perkett joining us.